Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 100.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. So this is a very special episode for us. This is our 100th episode. How have we recorded 100 episodes of this, Kelly?
I don't know, but I have to think I should have done that. This is episode 100 with a little bit more glee because, like, wow, how has that happened? Like, it's so funny because it honestly feels to me like we just recorded our first few episodes like last week, and actually we've been doing this for 2.5 years. So those first few episodes, don't listen to them. Start at episode 6. but you know, because it's interesting. Someone sent me through an interview this morning asking about podcast stuff, and she was like asking about the benefits of it. Like, why did you even start Straight and Curly? And I said, oh, you know, a few reasons, but one of them was it was a chance to collaborate with, you know, someone else in the space who I really loved and admired. And I have to say, Carl's, that's to this day ongoing. Is a real delight.
Me too.
So thank you.
Me too. I was actually thinking that the other day because I was like, because you have to, when you're in business, like reevaluate things that you're doing and what you're involved in. And I frequently go through and have a look at all the things I'm doing and what I'm spending my time on. And every time I come to Straight and Curly, I'm like, it's not income generating, which is not amazing. But then everything else, I'm just like, just trumps it. It's like, you know, I get to collaborate with, you know, someone who I've been online with for so long and whose ideas I just admire so much. And, you know, all of the research that you do. And I think we complement each other very well. And also just our listeners, they're insane. They're just so awesome. Like that group, every time I go in there, someone's asking a really great question or they're responding to something. And I got a beautiful message from one of our listeners whose name I can't remember. I want to say it's Kelly, actually.
Kerry. No, Was it Kerry?
Yes. Yes. Kerry from the UK. She wrote this beautiful message saying that, you know, we, inspired her to go back to study, and she was feeling really, low in confidence about going back to study, but she, you know, listened to a few of our podcasts and just really applied herself, and she got her marks back and she passed. And then she sent us this beautiful message, and I was just like, ah, that's just, it's amazing.
Yeah. And that's, I think definitely the group and our listeners is what keeps us going, because it's just not, it's nice to know that you're making a difference. Like, we're not like, I don't feel like we, you know, we're not changing the world or doing anything massive, but I just think
getting people out of bed and getting them to the gym, I'm like, that's good
enough
for me.
I reckon. So, yes. Okay, so enough.
So anyway, enough reminiscing and self-congratulating there. And we are actually going to kick off, as we do every week, with one of the lovely reviews that someone has left us on iTunes. We share these reviews because, you know, yes, we need everyone who listens to us to know that there are people out there who think we're awesome. But we also just really love being able to give our listeners a shout out on the show. So today's review is from a listener whose iTunes handle is too many nicknames, 2, 3, 1, 5, 6, 7. He or she says, love, love, love this podcast. I started listening to it a few months ago and I'm yet to get through all the episodes, but I listen to it when I'm running, so it's become a little treat. I love all the self-improvement tips and have recently adopted an earlier start to my day after hearing about Kelly's 4:15 a.m. wake-ups. Keep up the great work, ladies. I love that it's a treat. Like, when people tell me that listening to our podcast is a treat for them for the week, because I've got podcasts that I have that I save for specific things. There are ones that I just like pop on when I go to the shops or just kind of having when I'm pottering around. But if I'm doing like a particular task, I'll often save like my favorite murder or something like that. And so that just makes my day when people say our podcast is a treat.
Yeah, definitely. I love that too. Thank you so much, Too Many Nicknames. And I hope you haven't started getting up in the fours as well, because that is something I don't really recommend, even though I do it. But I do thoroughly endorse the power of simply getting up earlier than you do now, anybody who's listening. So on with the show, and our second segment is everyone's favorite segment. Well, it's certainly my favorite segment, and that is Carly's random thing of the week. So Go, Carly.
So my random thing of the week is actually more of a rant than a random thing that happened, but it's just a thing that I've been thinking about and it's really been pissing me off. So the thing I don't like is when people say, I disagree with you and that's okay. So it's a new phrase that seems to be popping up a lot online. And I feel like there was a big article that someone wrote about how to deal with people who are not agreeing with you online. And they've used that phrase because those exact words have popped up so many times. And I'm thinking, which self-improvement bastard is responsible for telling people to say that? And, you know, most of the time it's fine. Like, you know, if someone says, I disagree that pineapple on pizza is gross, like it is gross, it's disgusting, but cool, whatever. We've got differing opinions on that. That's totally fine. But recently I've had a lot of people go to town on me for things that I've written. And when I've defended myself, they've come back with, I disagree with you and that's okay.
It's a little bit patronizing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And here's my issue. So I had a woman go just off chops at me for, because I was talking about intermittent fasting and she was saying it's destroying my metabolism. It's a stupid fad diet. It doesn't work for anyone. So I've extensively researched it. I've been heavily monitored by a doctor through blood tests and that kind of stuff while I have successfully lost and maintained a loss of 11 kilos. Prior to that, I've tried every other freaking diet. None of them worked. This is the only one that's actually working for me. And I explained all of this to her with all of the evidence-backed up research. And she wrote, I disagree with you and that's okay. And I'm like, you can't disagree with something that is working for me. It may not work for you, which is totally fine, but you can't disagree with something that's working for me. It's like disagreeing that my favorite wine is Shiraz. You don't get to have an opinion on that. And the phrase, I disagree with you and that's okay, just makes you sound like a total butthead. So everyone, stop using that phrase. It's not empowering. It's condescending. And most people who use that use it as a get out of jail free card because they can't answer the argument that you came back with.
So true.
And the people who say that to me, and I've had, I'd say, four people say it to me in the last month, and it's always after. I had another one when I said frozen meals. Everyone's like really anti-frozen meals. And I was saying, you know what? Actually, there's a lot of research that shows that they have a higher nutrient content than fresh vegetables a lot of the time. There's also some really excellent clean places.
So frozen vegetables versus fresh vegetables or frozen meals?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Both. Yeah. So there are some companies that are doing clean versions of frozen meals that don't have added salt and preservatives and that kind of stuff in them. And I mean, they're not great for the environment. I completely understand that. So, I mean, I would only use them in emergencies, but I was saying, you know what, if you need to get a frozen meal every, you know, fortnight or whatever, don't beat yourself up because you can actually get healthier versions of it, that kind of thing. And this woman was like, oh my God, that's a terrible example. They're so unhealthy. And I was going, that's just wrong. You're just wrong. Like, and then I proved to her that she was wrong. She's like, well, I disagree with you and that's okay. And I'm like, oh my God, my head is going to explode. I'm like, oh. So anyway, that was, that's Carly's random thing of the week. Stop saying that phrase.
This is so funny because this morning I was kind of like, I was thinking ahead to the podcast and I was thinking, huh, if I had to do a Kelly's random thing of the week, like what would I say? And the thing I came up with, which I can't even remember, was I can remember what it was. It was about workmen because the blocks next door to us has been leveled and they're just about to start building on it. And last week they were doing some site works and they're getting ready to put the pad down, which if you're in America, I think that might be the equivalent of foundations, you know, the concrete thing that the house sits on. Anyway, there was wheelie bins on the block and of all the places those workmen could put the wheelie bins to get them out of their way, where do you reckon they put the wheelie bins? Yes, that's right. They put them in my garden on top of my plants. Like I came back from walking the kids to school and like I've had a bit of a bad year, guys, so this was not my best moment, but they had these wheelie bins sitting on top of my plants in my garden, I just flung the wheelie bins back into the block. Very out of character, not my best moment, but it felt very frigging good to do that because I was so angry. But
that's such a straw that broke the camel's back moment right there.
It kind of really was. I was just
Sorry, this is completely off topic, and this is also like, but it's still part of the Carly's random thing from last week. After we finished recording 2 weeks ago, you butt dialed me on your way to pick up the kids on Skype, and so you were holding your phone, and because you video called me, I could just see your thigh as your phone was swinging in your hand, and I was going, Kelly, 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 and all I could see, you were booking it, man. You were walking so fast. You were
getting in there
to get those kids. It was hilarious. I was just like, oh my God, you just totally hand dialed me. And then I ended up just hanging up because I thought it would be really funny to get your attention. But it was a good like 9 minutes of me being like, Kelly, Kelly, Kelly. And you just weren't having a bar of it. You were just like, nah, go on and get my kids.
Oh, it's so hilarious. Funny. Sorry about that. But yes, anyway, maybe we should rename this segment Kelly and Carly's Rants of the Week, and we can just download or not. Because you know how we always do a download before each episode to each other?
Oh, my God. We did a massive one today, guys. Like,
So maybe we should do that in the podcast. That would be so entertaining. Anyway, I agree with your rant, Carls, because I kind of feel it's akin to mistaking opinions for fact, and that's something that drives me insane. When someone just because they feel really strongly about something, they think it's fact, and it's like, no, I understand you feel really strongly about that, but it's still your opinion. You don't actually have anything to back it up. It's just how you feel.
But also it's I think a lot of people are too scared to change their opinions. Like I was very anti frozen meals for a very long time, but now that I've discovered some of these like, you know, cleaner places that are doing them, and to be honest, most frozen meals are gross. I really get that. Like they're full of preservatives and foul stuff and sugar and like just don't bother with 90% of them. But there are some companies that are doing great ones at the moment. I'm kind of going, you might actually have to reframe the way you think about this thing that you've been told is so unhealthy for so long. It's kind of like when you start doing, if you start eating low carb, high fat, you really have to be okay with eating high fat after you've been taught for so long that fat is bad. Like I was talking to my cousin the other day, and you know how eggs aren't bad anymore and you can eat as many as you want and it's fine. People of my grandma's generation cannot cope. Like she just cannot get her head around it because she's been told her whole life that you can only have like one egg every second day or otherwise your cholesterol is going to explode. And she'll see me and Ben cooking our eggs and bacon because we eat it every morning. And she'll say, oh, I love eggs. I'd have an egg every day if I could. And we tell her she can.
You can have several if you like.
Yeah, you can have three. Like just go nuts on the eggs. But she can't get over that barrier. And I think that's actually one thing that just if you want to work on yourself today, be open to changing your opinions about things, I think is a very good lesson.
It's a nice message for our 100th episode. Very appropriate.
It is very appropriate. So let's move on with the – oh, no. Our next segment. This is actually turning out to be my favorite segment. I really like it. So this is the if you were our best friend, we'd tell you. So this one came – this is where someone writes in with some advice that they'd like about a situation that they're having. So this is from Sarah, which is not her real name. She actually gave us her Facebook name and her real name and told us not to use her Facebook name. So I used her real name and Kelly's gone in and changed it to Sarah because she's just like extra layers of protection there. So I'm like, okay, cool. Her name is Sarah, but it's not but
even
actually
funny,
Sarah.
It was like her real name and I'm not giving away too much by saying this, but her real name starts with J, but like all my fictional names start with J. So then I had to come up with a non-J real name. So I just went Sarah, which is so like –
just like
biblical,
the other name.
Yes. Anyway, what did Sarah say?
So Sarah, not her real name, says, my question makes me sound like a bit of an asshole, but I could really use some advice. And this question does not make her sound like an asshole at all, by the way.
Yeah.
So she says, my friend in her 30s was in a long-term relationship for many years. That relationship ended, and since then she has dated a string of men, all of whom were a combination of unavailable or unsuitable. As soon as one relationship ends, she jumps right into the next, sometimes with crossover when she thinks one might be ending soon. Most of these guys she's finding on Tinder. There's your first problem. When those dalliances end, she comes to us, her friends, and asks, why does this keep happening to me? She seems genuinely perplexed and frustrated at the repeating pattern. I've always avoided answering and just offered support, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe I should answer her kindly and honestly next time she asks. How do I be a good friend here, Kelly?
Oh, this is hard because it's going to involve the truth. And we spoke about this in the group quite recently, actually, that there are people out there who are like, I just want to be told the truth all the time. And its reality is nobody wants to be told the truth most of the time, to be honest. And so we spoke about how do you tell people the truth thing. And what we came up with is you need to ask yourself three questions. So first thing is the thing you have to say the truth? And it does sound like it is. The second thing is it necessary? And it does sound kind of necessary to say something, although Carly will disagree with me shortly. And then the final thing is if you have to deliver a hard truth and it's necessary, is to be kind. And you, Sarah, sound like you totally have the kindness side of things down pat, and it sounds like you care deeply for your friend. So I think just find the kindest way you can to deliver that necessary truth. And the other thing that you can do is to get her Kerry Sackville's new book, which is called Out Yes. There, which is all about dating in midlife. So I haven't read it yet, but I will, even though I'm not dating in midlife. But it's Kerry, so of course I'm going to read it. But
she's a fabulous writer, and everything she writes is very funny.
But anyway, I know it's going to be amazing and very funny because she wrote it. But I also know that Kerry in the book talks about the kind of guys you need to flat out stay away from, like the unavailable types, the ones who...
And also the perils of Tinder.
Yes, I'm pretty sure she covers that too. So maybe maybe just give your friend her book to say, look, this is funny, someone's experiencing, you know, is dating just like you might like it. And it might just start some conversations, and it might be a good way to go about it without having to deliver hard truths. But Carls, you think differently to me, which is fun.
Oh, it's not necessarily differently. I think I just imagined this on a different timeline than Kelly. So for me, I think it depends on how long she's been doing this for. She's in her fourth year of doing this, then definitely talk to her about it. But if she's still at kind of like the 3, 6, 9 months even, if it was like a particularly serious relationship and she's grieving pretty hard for it, I think that in my experience of girlfriends who have ended long-term relationships, they tend to go crazy on Tinder for a few months and drink a lot of wine and be super dramatic about every breakup, and then they chill out and just start being normal again. So I think if the behavior continues, again, I'm not exactly sure where you are in the timeline of this. I don't know if it's a particularly recent thing or if you're kind of like, oh my God, I can't hear one more story about a dickhead guy that you dated on the weekend. So yeah, if it continues for a longer period of time, definitely say something. But I mean, in the meantime, just get shit-faced with her and listen to all the awful date stories. That's my favorite thing. I'm actually lacking any single friends at the moment. And it's really making me sad, because the problem is that like when you've got friends that are coupled up, they're really boring. Like, you know, and I'm boring too. Like, I've caught up with my best friend. She was in New Zealand for a few weeks and went to a wedding. And then I had a wedding while she was away. And they're really close friends of ours that these people got married. And I went over to her house last night, and then I told her about the wedding I went to, and she told me about the wedding she went to. And then she went, how's your life? I'm like, it's good.
She's the like, how's Ben? Same. I'm
like, good. And she's like, yeah, I'm good. I've just got my same husband and my same child I had 2 weeks ago. I'm like, yeah, yeah, me too. Like, there's just, honestly, you get to the point where you can't have conversations anymore. So single people, like, I know this, I hope this isn't an offensive thing, but I love hearing my single friend stories, and they're always really funny. Like, one of my mates slept with a guy, and then she made him leave, and then the next day she found him asleep in the hallway outside her apartment. And the funny thing is that I was like, why was he there? And she said, I don't know. I just left and got coffee and breakfast and then came back and he was gone. And I was like, but don't you want to know why? Like, was he too drunk to get home? Did he not have money? Was he just tired? Why was he asleep? She's like, I don't know. And like, you know, these are the conversations I love having, because I'm trying to reverse engineer why this guy was asleep outside her house. So yeah, my advice is to check your timeline. If you're further in, go with Kelly's advice. If it's still early days,
just ride it out.
Revel in the glory of the fabulous stories that you're hearing, because all of your coupled up friends are boring.
All right. So our next segment before we get onto the topic for the day is each of us share our recommendation of the week. And My recommendation is probably going to be a little bit controversial, but mine is medication for mental health problems. So some context, and I dumped all this on Carly before the show, so she knows what I'm talking about, and she knows it's nobody who would be listening to this show, because that would definitely be really weird if this person was listening to my podcast. Anyway, last week, someone who I thought was a friend committed a very huge betrayal of trust, and the kind that, like, when it's happening, like, it just knocks the breath out of you. Like, I literally couldn't breathe. I did not see it coming. And I don't know if it's just me or whether this is everyone thing, but, like, when I believe in a person, I believe in them hard. Like, I am not cynical in any way. I don't expect.
No, you're really not. Yeah.
Like, you know, probably on borderline, like I like to think I'm not naive, but probably I am. But yeah, I trust people hard until they break that trust, and then it's very, very hard to get it back. And, you know, when a betrayal of trust happens, it rocks my whole foundation. Like, I lose all my confidence because I start wondering, like, if I'm a terrible judge of character, and I, like, wonder what I miss and if I'm really stupid. And it kind of – the whole thing just completely set off my anxiety. And honestly, if I did not have medication – like, I'm not really sure what I would have done. I just wouldn't have been able to function. I wouldn't have been able to sleep. I wouldn't have been, you know, no good to my family, and they would have had to be dealing with me for 3 days, until I could come down off that anxiety high. But anyway, the medication, it brought me down enough that I was at least able to sleep that night. And then, of course.
And function through it as well.
Yeah, because don't underestimate the ability to function, you know, like, because go back a few years before I knew anything about such a thing as medication for anxiety. Like, I just thought that you just breathed your way through it. And, you know, and I would spend my whole day breathing my way through things until one day a friend said to me, you know, you might be able to get some help with that. And I was like, oh, really? And she, you know, so I went to the doctor, and the doctor gave me something. And, like, I remember the first time taking it, and I was like, oh my God, why have I been fighting with this and just trying to breathe my way through it for, like, all these years, when there is something that can, like, you know, it doesn't cure you. It doesn't fix the inherent problem of whatever is triggering your anxiety, but it brings you down enough to be able to function as a human being, and then you can actually then go about doing the things you need to do to address the problem. So, yeah, I am a huge believer in medication. You know, the kind that a doctor prescribes, obviously.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And so, like, if you like me, good few years ago, are trying to fight something like anxiety or depression on your own, it just might be worth seeing your doctor and just having a chat with them. No obligations, no anything. I'm not trying to push anyone into doing something.
But also just having conversations like this is so important, because it's really important to destigmatize the whole concept of treating mental illnesses. There's no difference between taking something to take the edge off your anxiety than it is to have a puffer or use some sort of a medication for a migraine. All of that is – all of those things are the result of a chemical imbalance.
Yes.
They just present themselves differently. So I'm a huge believer in medication for mental wellness, and I'm so pleased that it's become more of a conversation that we can have publicly, and that people can admit to their own, like, – because, I mean, the thing is that the whole stigma is so dumb, because you kind of you know, you started this segment by saying it's controversial, and it was sort of like it came across as a bit of an admission. But if you had, like, chronic migraines, you wouldn't have that cagey kind of apologetic tone in your voice while talking about it.
Yeah, you're so right. And I was a bit worried, because I'm like, I don't want to be standing here going, oh, if you got anxiety, you got to go get medication. But maybe, like, I should. Like, it is,
yeah.
Like, it is a chemical thing, and, you know, because otherwise medication wouldn't help it. And, like, I just think, yeah, I just know a lot of people who refuse to have medication because they don't like the thought of it, and because there is that stigma around it. And I used to be one of those people, and I used to think I can handle this myself. I don't need help from anybody or any kind of pill. And then when I had the medication, I felt so stupid that I fought it myself for so long. So Yeah. So
but it also works in the opposite direction as well. Like if sometimes people take medication, it doesn't work for them. I know a lot of people have taken medication, but that's true with any medication.
Yeah.
Like you know, it takes you a while to find what dosage you need in your asthma puffer. It takes you a while to understand what period pain medication works for you. Every woman I've spoken to uses a different thing. They use Nurofen or they use Ponstan or they use, you know, it's about kind of finding the thing that works for you and, you know, not being afraid of exploring that option if it is something that you struggle with, because everyone deserves to lead a happy life where they feel safe.
Yeah.
And I think if you can't feel safe with your own thoughts, then you really need to work on that.
Oh, I think that's a really nice way of putting it, Carls. I appreciate that, because it's true. We should feel safe in our own heads, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Because you can't run away from your own head.
No, like, you can't.
It's just there all the time.
So anyway, I'm sorry about that, Carls, because I feel like I've set you up a bit, because your recommendation is a little bit less intense than
it's
mine.
It's so but, lame now.
But it's going to relieve, like, you know, light and shade, guys, light and shade.
Yeah. Okay. It's all about balance. So, guys, my recommendation of the week. It's the I can't even get it out. It's just like the lamest recommendation ever. Kelly's just like, change your life and you know, empower yourself. And I'm just kind of like, guys, do you want to know what's even more awesome than that? The new pegboard system at IKEA.
I'm literally crying.
So that's my recommendation of the week, guys. So I can't even get through this. It's like, so I'm putting my performer face on. So like I've actually been wanting a pegboard for ages and ages, but traditional pegboards are usually made of really thin plywood. And No. I'll get there. I'm just kind of going back to like the conversation that we had, and now I'm just like, guys, not only is this pegboard really great, but old, like my troubles is that old pegboards sucked so much. Like that's just really a problem for me. But anyway, so I'm with it now. So the old pegboards used to splinter, and it was really hard to get accessories to sit right on them, and it was just a nightmare. And the IKEA ones, they have like all these different shapes and sizes, and they're made of like a light metal, and you can put like little containers on them and stuff. And I think I spoke in an episode recently about we call it the pile of sin. Did I talk about the pile of sin?
I don't think you call it that, but I think that is the greatest phrase of all time, and I now need to find a situation where I get to use that. I think I'm going to use it about my kids' playroom. Go and clean up that pile of sin. Neither of them
will get
it.
It's the pile of sin, because it's just like it's everything bad about life. It's the stuff you don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
The stuff you can't find a spot for, you don't know what to do with it, so you chuck it in your pile of sin. So we had, because we moved in December, so we've been here for a few months, and yeah, we had this giant pile of sin, and Ben got the new IKEA pegboard, and it's got a tray, so we've got a spot for my wallet and for his, like for our sunnies, all of our spare change, all of our medication, and it just changes everything. When you've got a little spot to put everything, you just put it all in that spot. And it's magic. So our pile of sin is now gone, which is just the best thing ever.
And probably anxiety reducing as well, if you were prone to anxiety, just saying.
Yes. Also tying that back in, because complete package is what we are.
We're all about the clean segue and the tidy links between segments. So it is now time, finally, for our topic of the week. And being our 100th show, we thought a good topic would be to share the self-improvement hacks that have had the greatest impact on our lives. So, you know, as I said, we're not saying these are the most impactful hacks for everybody out there. These are simply the things that we have done that have made the biggest difference to our own lives. So anxiety.
And I'd also say that all of these things have stuck for us as well.
Yeah.
There, because we try a lot of stuff and ditch a lot of stuff. And I mean, like I re-listened to a podcast we did ages ago where I was like, guys, I'm like really into tongue scraping right now. And I'm like, I have not scraped my tongue in, I don't even remember owning a tongue scraper. So there are some things that we try and then end up not doing them. But yeah, if you ever hear me talk about tongue scraping, drinking. I don't do that anymore because I don't know why. I don't think it's bad. I just was doing it for a while and then stopped. And now I'm like, when did I do that and why?
Well, my first things, I'll go first. The first thing I did, and this is, I mean, it's not like one of the most, the first self-improvement things I did, but it's kind of like almost at the start of my blogging journey, is I quit sugar. So like way back when Sarah Wilson first started writing about sugar in her newspaper column, and then people got really excited, you know, interested in the topic.
You were well on the bandwagon of that.
I was totes on the bandwagon. I honestly think I was probably one of the first people to do it, like when it was like a 30-page PDF that you could buy for like $12 or something.
Yeah.
And that's how good and gentle it is. Like I just loved it because it was non-dogmatic. It sounds bad. It sounds like quit sugar and stop eating fruit and stop eating this and that. And it was just like, it was a very gentle way to go about things. It eased you into it. It cut out things and then it reintroduced things like fruit later. And
it also made you aware of why you were giving up fruit and how you could reintroduce it. And just, yeah. I think a lot of diets don't explain why you're doing it.
Yes. That's right. It was very, it spoke very specifically about the why behind everything. It encouraged you to self-experiment gently. And I've stuck with it since what, 7-8 years ago now. It really helped me eliminate packaged foods from my life, which were a really major part of my life back then. I don't like cooking, so I would turn to packets to just make it as painless as possible. And now, you know, I cook all my own food myself. This is a pretty big deal. And, you know, just everything better. You know, my gut works better. If your gut works better, your health is better in general. And, yeah.
Sorry, I just had a thought. I'm so sorry for interrupting you, but you know how you told me about kefir?
Kefir, yeah.
Oh, do you say kefir?
Kefir. Or is it? It probably is kefir. I don't know.
I say kefir. I don't know why. Anyway, it's either kefir or kefir, one of them. Anyway, that stuff. I got some.
Yes.
And I've been making milk kefir for Ben every day and he's loving it. And I've got it all like we do a 48-hour ferment. So it's all like nice and thick.
Me too.
And it's like so weird. But so cool and so easy. And like we were spending so much money on the store-bought kind.
I know, because I died when you said you were buying it. And I was like, no, you can't buy that stuff. No.
Yeah, it's way too expensive. But yeah, because Ben likes the milk one. So I've been making it for him. I've been avoiding it just, you know, because of period issues and stuff. But it's so yummy. And then I'm just like, oh, like it's just, you know, yummy, like kind of tart thick yogurt.
Yeah,
it's so
that's
good.
Right.
Anyway,
I
just wanted to let you know that I get a lot out of our podcast too. And I was like, oh, maybe I should buy some kefir grains. And so I did. And yeah. And if anyone can confirm how you actually say kefir or kefir, that would be great because I don't know.
No, me neither. So your first one, Carl?
My first one is intermittent fasting combined with low carb, high fat eating. I think been the biggest game changer of my life. I've always eaten low carb, but if you don't up your fat intake, you're just hungry all the time. So sticking to low carb, I've always been quite good at it because I just am good at it.
because you don't have a choice.
Because I don't have a choice. I just have to. But, yeah, introducing higher fat foods and just working around that whole way of eating and fasting, like when I tried the 5-2, it just did not work for me. I mean, it worked, but I hated it.
But you couldn't keep it going. You couldn't be consistent with it.
Couldn't keep it going.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 16-8 has just been a complete life changer for me. It's so good. And it also means that I can relax on weekends and have a few glasses of wine. And another thing that's made it so good is Ben doing it with me. So we go out to dinner and it's not me being like – and I really hate that this is a reality. It just to reiterate, that really annoys me. But people take our diet more seriously because Ben does it too. It's not just me going through one of my silly little girl fad diet things. So – but we're so strict about it. And, you know, we went away with Ben's parents on the weekend and we went out for Indian food and we don't eat rice and, you know, his parents are like, why aren't you eating rice? And we're like, oh my God, we've had this conversation with you so many times. But because it's the two of us, we're able to really hone in on it and people really respect that it's both of us doing it, and it's and you know, they can see benefits in us as well. Like Ben has lost so much weight and he had no weight to lose. And I've been able to maintain an 11 kilo weight loss. It has actually slowed down a bit, but I don't really mind so much. Like if I can maintain, I'm happy. It's just, you know, for my whole life, I've been losing 6 kilos and then gaining it back, and then losing 6 kilos and then gaining it back. And now I've lost 11 and I'm just staying. Like my weight is just, it is unwavering. It's been, yeah, it's been a really huge thing. And I feel like I've really nailed my eating routine. I'm able to stick to it. Like I don't even think about it.
And that's the important thing, because this is like, you know, our problem with diets is not so much the diet part, because diets, you know, there's a lot of good diets out there that teach you how to eat well, but if you can't do it forever, then they're kind of pointless, because then, you know, you do them to lose weight and then you stop doing them and then you put back on weight. Like, so any diet that we follow insofar as this is how I eat food has to be something sustainable. And it's just, yeah, I just think it's so awesome knowing your journey with food.
Yeah, to actually have found something.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And another thing that's really good, because like this is actually going to tie into, we have the same next point, but one of the things about giving up sugar and giving up treats and carbs and things is that I've reframed my thinking in that if I go to someone's house and they have chocolate there, I really like chocolate, I won't eat it, because now that I'm so I do low carb, high fat, but that's also really similar to another way of eating called ketogenic. And so when your body is in ketosis, getting in and out of ketosis is quite traumatic for your body. So staying in ketosis is the best way to go about it. And if you eat sugar and come out of ketosis, there's been some really weird things that Ben and I have noticed. So if we eat sugar, so on the weekend, we actually ended up going out for Thai food, and Thai food is notoriously high in sugar. So we didn't eat carbs, but a lot of the sauces and things had excess sugar in it. And we just didn't sleep for 2 nights. Like we just tossed and turned. And another thing that happens is you get really messed up dreams, like really, really weird ones. Just, they're not nightmares. They're just people that you know doing really weird shit in your dreams. And Ben has the exact same thing. So every time I'm tempted, I mean, occasionally I'll eat something and deal with the consequences and it's fine. And if we go away on holidays or if we're away for Christmas, you come out of ketosis and you stay out of ketosis for like a week or two because you're drinking lots of wine and there's kind of food around and stuff. But yeah, so often I'll get offered something and I'll be like, you know what? That is not worth the
getting out of
it. That I'm going to have tonight because of it. So, which is really, that's a fun way to look at food, because if it was like, oh, I'm going to get fat if I eat that, in the moment I'm like, I don't care.
Shove it in my mouth.
But if someone's going to say, well, if you eat that, you're actually not going to sleep tonight and you're probably going to have a nightmare.
Much easier.
It kind of reframes you, like, oh, maybe I won't do that.
Okay, so my second one is separating exercise from losing weight and making exercise more about mental health than losing weight. And I guess just some context around this is, you know, back in the day, probably I was going to say when I did triathlon, but probably it's literally been my whole life, because I've always been very aware of the whole calories in versus calories out thing. And so I've always, you know, if I've done a big run or I've played a, you know, full game of hockey, I'll be like, I can totally eat a whole pizza for dinner now. And it was a game I've played my whole life, like matching up whatever exercise I did with the amount of food that I could consume. And I also frequently rewarded myself, you know, so if I did a triathlon and it went for 2 hours, I'd be like, oh, just thinking about all the food that I could eat because I had done all this exercise, and just always inextricably linking exercise with food. And when I quit triathlon, I needed to find a different way to eat, because I couldn't keep exercising at the level that led me to eat whatever I wanted whenever I wanted, which is what I'd gotten used to. So it took a while, but the thing that I finally did in the end, I tried a lot of things. The thing that I finally did was I went, you know what? I'm just going to eat, you know, at the base level of calories for someone who is my size and weight. I'm just going to eat that every day, irrespective of how much exercise I do or don't do. And when I exercise, it's not going to be I'm going for a run to work off that croissant I ate last night. It's like I'm going for a run to, you know, because it's good for my mental health, basically. And so now, like, you know, because in the past I'd be like, well, if I'm not going to go for a run, there's no point in you. Or I didn't have a big meal last night, so I don't have to worry about going for a run tomorrow. Like now I'm like, no matter what, every single day I do something for 15 minutes, even if it's for a walk, because it's good for my mental health and because good weight, you know, good weight management is not about how much exercise you do. It's about nutrition. You cannot out-exercise bad nutrition no matter how hard you try. So just maintain good nutrition all the time, or, as you know, 80% of the time. Exercise for your mental health. And like, yeah, this has helped me with a lot of my food issues because I had a lot of food obsession issues growing up.
Yeah, my number two is exactly the same as Kelly's, although I had a different experience with the calories in versus calories out thing, because I have never had exercise do what it's supposed to do. I shared a meme a few weeks ago about it's very funny. It was like a girl just wrote on Twitter something about how I'll try and find the meme. I won't be able to read it out to you, but it was basically like, I don't understand people who lose weight exercising because literally nothing happens when I exercise. And I'm the same. So I was playing the same game as Kelly, but not getting any results ever. It didn't matter how little I ate or how much I exercised. Exercise did nothing for weight loss. So once I figured that out, I was thinking, well, what's the point? And then whenever I've been more sedentary in my life, I get down very, very quickly. So it's always just been more of a mental health thing for me. When I wake up in the morning, if I exercise in the morning, I have a positive, productive, good day. And when I don't, I don't. So that's the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning. I wake up and I think, do I want to feel good today? Do I want to be productive? Do I want to have a lot of energy? The answer is always yes. If the question was, do you want to get fat? I'll be like, yeah, actually, I want lots of fat really to keep me nice right and warm. I give zero shits about that. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, and you need to find a reason to get out of bed. And you can, and when you exercise, when you have exercise tied to weight loss, you can rationalize with yourself in the morning. You can be like, oh, I ate a pizza last night, but one pizza and not exercising today is not going to make a difference. And then you can make that argument every day for infinity. And it's just so important to disconnect those two things, because it's not healthy. Exercise should not be about weight loss. It should be about not dying young.
Yeah, it should be, you know, about having a good quality of life. You know, every single year that you grow older, the more you've exercised in your younger years, the better set up you will be when you're older. And yeah, it needs to be totally nothing to do with weight loss and everything to do with just good health in general. So
I also have an interesting point, and this is a totally a case study of one, and I'm sure people are going to say, oh, that doesn't apply to everyone, or, you know, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. But I, out of all of my friends, I have exercised the most consistently as an adult. I have exercised 3 to 5 times a week, every week since I was 16. I'm the only person in my friendship group who has never been to hospital. I've literally never been to hospital for anything. And I also have no body pain at all. All of my friends are kind of, you know, in their mid 30s to 40s, and they've got neck pain or back pain or some kind of RSI from something that they've done. And I'm the only one that doesn't. And I'm the one who's exercised the most. Yeah. I just think that's a very interesting point.
Yeah, I think it's valid, because
is that valid?
I think so, because
Thank
it's, you. You know, when you're exercising, you're using your core muscles. And it's amazing how, if you don't use your core muscles, how just the most banal of day to day activities can lead to pain, like sleeping in bed, you know, horizontal for 8 hours can lead to pain. So totally valid. we defy anyone Thank to you. Challenge that thought. okay, so my third thing that has been impactful from a self-improvement point of view has been scheduling out my work days, because I am like everybody else, that if I just write out a to-do list, one is probably going to be unrealistic. It's going to have 10 things on there when I have like 2 hours to do 10 things. The other thing is, I'm going to do I'm going to cherry pick the easiest things, like the things I can do most quickly, just so I can strike them off the list and get that little dopamine hit. So that's not an effective way to go about your workday. It means you're only ever doing the easiest, probably lowest return things first, and means you never get to do the big high return things because they're too hard. So I now schedule out my workdays, which one tells me very quickly if the to-do list I've created is realistic or not. But two, it tells me the order in which I'm going to do things. So it takes out that whole, finish that job. What shall I do next? Oh, I'll do the easiest thing. Now I just do what my list tells me to do. I schedule my hardest things for the start of the day, and then I leave my easy, low mind things, you know, for the end of the day when I'm most tired. So yes, that has really made huge, huge differences to me being able to get to be productive in my workday. What about you, Carls, for your third thing?
I agree with the one that you just said. That's a big one for me too, but it's not one of mine because I thought I'd choose a different one so that we can like mix it up a little. So my third one is being extremely selective about friends and not letting toxic people in my inner circle. I'm also very disciplined about only offering what I'm able to in friendships.
Yeah, that's a good one. So I like that.
Yeah, it's something I've actually been quite good at from sort of high school onwards. I did a lot of theatre in high school and just met really lovely, wonderful people outside of school. And I just basically stopped engaging with everyone at school. I wasn't mean, or I wasn't I didn't kind of seclude myself, but I just prioritized this other group of people that just spoke to me and enriched my life and were supportive, and I wanted to, and they challenged me, and they were, you know, intelligent, and they taught me things, and I just found I wasn't getting anything from the people at school. And I actually, as an adult, am not close with anyone that I went to school with, not a single person. Which I think is very interesting. I've got my best mate from primary school. I'm still really good friends with her, but that's like a primary school thing. My high school friends, I'm not really friends with, like very, very close friends with any of them. And it was just more about removing myself from the high school drama and all of the crap that went on and just focusing on other things rather than engaging in that. And yeah, it just, I don't regret that for a second. I think it was one of the best choices I ever made. And I kind of continued doing that into adulthood. And the second I see someone wanting too much from me from a friendship, or involving me in their drama, or being toxic, or if I find myself dreading spending time with someone, I stop spending time with them.
Which is just like, you know, it's kind of like really empowering. Like we actually do have the power to make these decisions. Like we think that friendships are forever, but you know, some friendships are for seasons, and we've got to get comfortable with that. And we need to stop holding on to friendships that aren't serving us well. Like if someone doesn't make us feel good about ourselves, then why do we feel obliged to keep that friendship going? Like we're not, you know, and we need to get comfortable with that. So yeah, I really like that.
And also not denying someone friendship, that's a really awful way of putting it, but I used to think that made me a bad friend because I would kind of stop friendships from happening, but it actually made me a better friend to my existing friends. Yes. Because I don't have time to give that much of myself to heaps and heaps of people, and by not taking any more applicants for friendships as an adult, I'm able to concentrate on the current friendships that I have. And I think that makes me a better friend.
Yeah, I agree. I like it. Interesting. So my fourth thing that has been impactful has been prioritizing sleep. And whenever I say this to people, they're like, oh, duh, like, don't we all want to get more sleep? And it's like, well, we all want to get more sleep, but who of us actually does the things that it's needed to do to get that sleep? So I set up my life to get the 7 hours of sleep that I get. Like, you know I get up early, I get up at 4:15. So what do I need to do to get up at 4:15 and still have 7 hours of sleep? I have to be asleep by 9:15. So I set my life up to be asleep by 9:15. I don't stay up watching Netflix all night when it would be really easy to do. You know, shall we have another good wife tonight? Yeah, let's do it. But then you can't get up in the morning. So yeah, let's not. So I think it's very easy when you're an adult, when you're a parent, when you're someone who's like loves the work that you do. it's so easy to sacrifice sleep, but it's the there is such a diminishing returns that is involved with that. It's something you can do very, very short term, like two nights in a row. But if you've been doing it month after month after month, and it's just become how you live your life, and you think, oh, look, you know, I function fine on 5 hours of sleep a night. Well, the thing is, you function fine, but your body doesn't like it. It makes you hold on to fat. So it affects your weight, your ability to manage your weight. It affects your mood, which then affects your productivity, because if you're in a crappy mood and you're putting people offside and then you're having to put out fires, you could be spending that time being productive instead of having to clean up messes that you've made. So it's just poor sleep affects so many things on a health-based point of view and from a productivity point of view and from a relationships point of view. And I think that too many of us easily sacrifice it. And I think that me making a real, I didn't really have to make it. Like, it's something that's always been really important to me. But as an adult with kids and who has a business and who has a lot on her plate, like, I have kind of doubled down on sleep when things get crazy as opposed to sacrificing it. And that's one of the, you know, very impactful things that I do for, yeah, for my health and for my life.
I do a similar thing, but then I'm much more easily led out of it than you are. Like, if there's something really good on TV, I'm a bit shit at doing it. Like, I did that on Sunday night. The Formula One was on, and it was such a great race. There were four crashes. Four. That's unheard of. Like, that's heaps and heaps. It was the race in Azerbaijan, if anyone watches it, but it was so freaking good. It was amazing. Like, I was just enthralled. And then because two of the people on the same team crashed into each other, and I just couldn't go to bed because I needed to wait and see when they got interviewed. Like, I'm such a gossip. And then I'm just like, oh my God, they're going to hate each other after this. And then they were like interviewing Ricardo. And I was just like, oh my God, you hate him, don't you? Because it was his fault. And the team's like, it wasn't anyone's fault. And then everyone at the Formula One was going, totally, yeah, it was that other guy's fault. Yeah. So that was funny. Yeah. So my number four is locking down my daily routines and being unapologetic about sticking to them. So I used to be able to be swayed into changing my plans, but just I've become more and more staunch in sticking to my routines. And if a friend says, oh, do you want to go for a beer on Friday afternoon? I'll say, yep, sure. But I don't finish at the gym until 6:30. And if that friend says, oh, can you not just skip the gym and come a bit earlier? I'll say, no, I finish the gym at 6:30.
I can just like picture you going, no, I finished the gym at 6:30. No. That's
what's going to happen. So awesome. Sorry about that. Like, I don't make excuses anymore. I was really apologetic about things in the past, but now I'm like, nah, not doing it. And like at the moment, I'm not drinking alcohol and I'm being really hardcore about it. And usually I've got a few friends that can convince me to have a drink, but I'm just like, no, I'm going alcohol free until the 7th of May. And oh, is it the 7th of May?
No, damn, I've still got 7 days. Sorry.
Damn.
All right. My fifth one's going to be very short and sweet. And it is, I made peace with my overthinking brain. So I used to think that if a thought popped into my head, it meant something. And then I needed to know what it meant. Like, if I thought something bad of someone, I would be like, oh my gosh, should I be thinking that of that person? What does it say about me that I thought that about that person? And it was just like, oh my God, round and round and round we went. And I was listening to a podcast one day where they kind of introduced that thought that, like, I think a psychologist said, he's like, we have thoughts, not all of them mean anything. And if you try to interrogate every single thought that you ever have, you when are you going to live? And I was like, oh my God, he's totally right. And that's when I kind of learned the concept of, I don't have to engage with every thought that enters my head. Something can enter my head and then I can kind of just let it go. Like, it can just keep going through and I don't have to do anything with it. And it was like, I don't know, it was like kind of really revolutionary to me. It might be like, duh, are you serious, to other people? But for me, for overthinking me, I was like, it was really, it was a huge revelation. So yes, that's my fifth
one. I really like that one. I think that's a great one. My fifth one is really listening to my body and paying attention to what happens to it when I alter my behavior. I think a lot of people don't really pay attention to what is happening to their bodies. And I think just getting in tune with what my body does. And I think that actually came from my mum's a nurse.
Yeah,
and right. So I, like whenever I said weird things, like, oh, this thing's happening, my mum would say, oh, well, you know, like growing pains. Like I got really bad growing pains in my legs and mum explained that to me. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And it was sort of from my mum explaining things happening to me as I was, you know, going through puberty and that kind of stuff. It made me think about that kind of stuff as I got older. And that's how I figured out that dairy affects my period pain. It's how I figured out that, you know, like I, a friend of mine's trying to get pregnant at the moment. And I was talking to her about ovulation pain because I actually
get ovulation
pain. It's a... It's weird, isn't it? And it's like, it really hurts, but it's very different to period pain. It's sharper and it's more localized. Like period pain's a lot duller. And I was explaining this to her and she was just saying, she was fascinated because she doesn't get ovulation pain. And she was like, how did you even find out about this? I'm like, because 14 days after every period, I get this stabbing pain in the side of my body. And then I told my mum about it and she was like, oh yeah, ovulation pain. Like it's a whole thing. So yeah, I think just being curious about why things are happening in my body, changing my diet and changing the way I exercise and just monitoring myself. It sounds like I'm so self-obsessed right now. But
the core of everything that we talk about on this show, I feel, is that we really encourage people to try things, but don't just try them. Like pay attention to whether they actually work and try things one at a time. So that if something does or doesn't work, you know it's that thing, as opposed to like, let's try seven things at once and, oh my gosh, I feel amazing, but I don't know which of these seven things is the cause of it.
It was that did
it. So I love that, and I do feel it's kind of the core of what we talk about is healthy self-experimentation, knowing your body and listening to what your body tells you and then doing more of what your body likes other than, you know, eating – like your body likes eating chocolate. Or maybe your mouth likes eating chocolate, but your body doesn't really like it so much.
Or your brain likes eating chocolate.
Okay.
So that just about wraps up our 100th episode. We went a little bit longer today than usual, just as like a special 100th episode treat. So that brings us to the end of the topic for the day. And to the last two segments, actually, which I totally forgot about.
I was like, oh my gosh, wrapping up the show we've got like segments to go.
I've forgot the segments, our new segments. So we will go through what kicked ass this week and what kicked our ass. So kicked ass, mine is that I completed a really difficult crochet cardigan design. So the design itself wasn't super difficult. I just wanted to make it available in a variety of sizes, which makes like the maths for the stitches and the gauge and the yarn amounts really varied. So I had to figure out how much yarn was used for a certain area of the project and then figure out how much yarn is needed for the whole project. I was just like really super proud that I did good maths. I never sucked at maths at school, but I was just so proud of my problem solving of like, if I want to tell someone how much yarn they need to make this thing in this size, I'm going to have to figure out this and then I'm going to have to times it by this. And then I did it and I was like, oh my God, I'm a maths genius.
That's kind of a little bit, well, it's not the same as mine, but it was the kind of the feeling at the end was the same because like last week I had a meeting with someone who I've been helping develop out the idea for their book. And like the day of the – it was a Skype meeting. And the day of the meeting, like I was having like one of those super low energy days because the school holidays was sucking the life out of me. And I was – you know, I had a 3:30 a.m. start because that's how early I had to get up to try and stay on top of all my work. And, you know, and usually when I go into a meeting with like a writing or a coaching client, like I know exactly what I'm going to tell them to do as the next step. But in this case, it was just a bit of a weird one and – the client was a bit stumped and I was a bit stumped and I was freaking out because I was like, I'm not going to be able to deliver value to this person because I'm so tired and I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell them what to do. And it was one of those, I couldn't reschedule the call because they're in a weird time zone to me and it's hard to find good times to chat. So when you lock in a time, like you keep the time. Anyway, at some point during the course of the call, like they just said something and it was this tiny little thing, but it just triggered off something to me. And like my, you know, when your brain just like goes from like zero to hero in 1 second, and it was like, oh my God, yep. I got it. And I just figured out a really tangible and actionable next step. And like she went from being like really down and like, oh my God, I'm really stuck. And I went from being like, oh my God, I don't know what to tell you to do, to like, oh my God, I've got it. And yeah, we just both finished the phone call feeling really, really chuffed. And it was, you know, and I also kind of like finished up going, huh, you know, I'm pretty good at this stuff, you know. If I can do this when I am as tired and drained as I am, I reckon I might be good at what I do. So, yeah, so that was my kick ass. That was my nice thing for the week. Like, what kicked your ass, Carls?
Just before we move on, I'm really loving how much you're loving all of the work that you're doing with writing other people's books at the moment. That makes me very happy.
Thank you. I love it too. It's so fun.
Yeah. You've just been mentioning it and you've been like glowy about it. And I'm like, that's fucking awesome. Like, it's just so great. So kicked our ass. The cold weather is really kicking me at the moment in Melbourne. And I lived in an apartment that was incredibly temperate. It was in the middle of an apartment building. So it was basically just 20 degrees all year round. And now I live, our house is so cold. And on top of that, I've lost 11 kilos since last winter. So I don't have as much padding as I had before. And I'm back at a weight that I haven't actually been at since I was sort of in my early 20s. And literally, once I dip below this certain weight, I just get really, really cold all the time. And it's literally within a kilo. If I'm like 2 kilos heavier than this weight, I'm fine. If I drop below this particular weight, I just
cannot get warm. I know the feeling.
I cannot get warm.
I am the worst for that. I've never been warm other than in 37 degrees heat in summer, which is why I love summer. But yeah.
But usually I'm just like, I love winter because I don't cope very well in the summer. But yeah, so winter's really kicking me and I'm literally wearing a down coat in my own house. So
that's okay.
Yeah.
What's kicking my ass is the first 4 months of this year. So look,
you've had a rough one.
It has not been my, you know, it's so weird because like all my writing work and my editing stuff, like I'm loving it and it's just been keeping me so happy. But there's been heaps of other stuff going on in the background that has just been, it's been hard to get, you can't get past it. There's too much of it and there's no light on the horizon. So like, you know, I think this year has been a nice reminder that it really doesn't matter how organized you are or how well you set up your life. Things are just going to happen and you are just going to have to deal with them. And sometimes you have to keep plugging on even when there is no light at the end of the tunnel. So yes, I will admit to having a partial breakdown this week because, you know, when you're just sobbing in the study while your husband sits there and looks at you and goes, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I'm looking at him going, just let me sob and just listen. And that's all you have to do. So yeah, because you know, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so tired, and there's nothing, like, you know, I'm a practical person. I'm like, okay, I have this problem. What should I, you know, how do we fix it? Like, there's literally nothing I can do about it except just keep going for now. But I will say there are benefits to having a breakdown, and the main one is like everybody in your family, like they're on notice, and everyone, like, you know, from aunt down to Mia, they've just been like tiptoeing around me and giving me little pats on the back, and this is so sweet. So that's been, yes, the first 4 months of this year have kicked my ass, and there we go. And now that's how we're going to wrap up our 100th episode by me having a break.
On that note, to celebrate Kelly's mental breakdown, we are going to wrap up the show. Don't forget that we do have a book available for sale. It's Diets and Lifestyle Detoxes, and you can buy it at straightandcurly.com. Just click on the book tab. We also have a Patreon page.
Yes, and remember, we do have two goals for our Patreon page, the first of which is to reach $500 per month of pledges, and I think we're about halfway to that goal now. So thank you, everyone who has played so far. It really helps pay the production costs of the show, and we so appreciate not having to stress about that. So if you love listening to the show and you want to support it, just visit patreon.com/straightandcurly. And finally, jump into the Facebook group discussion for this week and tell us this. What is the single most impactful self-improvement thing you've ever done? We'd love to see you in there and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.